I'm speaking today with David Robinson, who is running for City Council at Large number 2. David, first question, why are you running for this office?
Well, Charles, it's great for you to be here. I'm happy to be doing this interview. And I'm very excited about running for City Council for Houston because I think in the roles of leadership that I've had around the city, I've enjoyed getting to know Houston for most of my life now. And it's with every day traveling around this great and diverse city that we see the varied texture of our neighborhoods and communities. And I think that diversity is something that I'm very proud of in our home city. And it's something that as a leader of the Super Neighborhood Alliance and as someone who served on the Planning Commission, I've seen at large through various roles of public service at our city. And to really work on making Houston a better place from a position of elected municipal leadership is something that I feel I will add to the discussion and to the leadership of our city in a way that will make it flourish even more.
Okay, now, of course, you ran for this same seat 2 years ago. What would you say you learned from that experience?
Well, I learned about the challenges of winning a race in the at-large position. Of course, it's a huge city, wonderful city. 640 square miles is the rough territory. And I think there are certainly challenges with familiarizing yourself to the voters. And I think it's a challenge, while it's also something that I embrace fully. I've enjoyed getting to know people across the city, and I think continue to do that. That's part of what I learned, is just how to get one's name out there. It's also a challenge, as you know, when there are 10 candidates in the race, and I think the two candidates who made it to the runoff last time were either a former elected official, in the case of Christy Thibaut, or a gentleman who had run for elected offices 11 times in our current incumbent. So they had some built-in name recognition that I think certainly helped them. And I think the longer that I continue to work on the city and the positions of leadership that I've had, I think the more familiar people are with the good works that I've been associated with, my leadership style, which is very collaborative. I like to think of myself as a good listener, a good collaborator, and I think I can bring that to the varied landscape of our city.
Okay. Now, certainly in your role with the Super Neighborhood Alliance, you were very closely engaged with the city on the revisions to Chapter 42.
That's true.
Development and density ordinance.
Right.
I know that the neighborhood advocates had some concerns about the changes going in.
We certainly do.
What's your evaluation of the ordinance as it was passed? Do you think, did you get what you wanted out of it? What are your concerns?
Well, I think it's a complicated answer that is ongoing. And let me say that in the council's passing of the amendments to Chapter 42, I think there was an updating of this original language from the 1999 original Chapter 42 ordinance that was long overdue. And it is something that I've been working on for about 7 years since I was first appointed to the Planning Commission. Certainly something we've been working on at the neighborhood level for longer than that. And you're right, the Super Neighborhood Alliance has been pivotal, I think, in the negotiations, which is an interesting word to use, that the city has enjoined with communities as well as the development community. And I am very proud that when the amendments were passed, we were essentially standing shoulder to shoulder with the building community. And I don't know that there had been precedent, really, for the GHBA and the Super Neighborhood Alliance being both advocates for this, generally speaking. Now, where I would draw a careful caution to that is the fact that there are ongoing conditions and understandings that we have built in with the city's administration, as well as with two critical departments at work in the city of Houston. One is the Planning and Development Department, ostensibly with a large oversight role in Chapter 42, and then with the Department of Public Works and Engineering. I will tell you, we are on the verge of hearing back from the city with an update. This is Andy Icken, who is our partner as the chief development officer for the city. And he is really the one that has promised us a set of answers for what we call the top 10 list of concerns. So the Super Neighborhood Alliance developed a top 10 list that included things like complete streets, addressing drainage. I think the number one issue was the overall expansion of the territory that is considered under the previously defined urban area. And so the urban area language, as originally established in 1999, was struck from the ordinance. So rather than having the density that is provided for in Chapter 42 bound by the inner 610 loop, when that definition was eliminated, it essentially included every square inch of the city going out to the extraterritorial jurisdiction. So that's what, in sort of a Ross Perotian diagram, it went, with, if my geometry and math are correct, from roughly 65 to 70 square miles of territory within the city, the 610 loop, to the extents of the city at 640 square miles. And there's a GIS expert at the planning department who did a calculation. When you take out the Memorial smaller cities and Bel Air and West U, it's roughly a 6 to 7 times scale increase of territory for the administration of these higher density provisions. That is terrifying to some of our super neighborhoods. Some of our communities are not yet prepared with things like deed restrictions or other ordinance-heavy regulations that can provide some protection for their communities. That's part of the compromise and the understanding we have with the city, is that we will engage in fortifying and strengthening some of the neighborhoods so they can be prepared for what may be oncoming development.
Well, I'd like you to talk a little bit more about that, because, as you know, I mean, one of the big stories in the city of the last few years has been lately a clash between developers and neighborhoods in places where developers have wanted to put up, generally speaking, high-rise, multi-unit dwellings. And we see that, I mean, the Ashby was the first case, but we're seeing it in the Heights, we're seeing it in Memorial, we're seeing it in River Oaks.
Yep.
The neighborhoods inevitably say is that they feel like they don't have anything that they can do to affect, let alone prevent, this kind of development in their neighborhood. So where do we go from here on what, if anything, can be done?
Well,
or should be?
One thing I will say, as a practicing architect and someone who has, in my leadership role with my super neighborhood, we really truly have engaged developers. We work with them before development starts in a negotiation that has proven to be beneficial both to the developer with their interests as well as the neighborhood. And I think it's in some ways a model that the city needs to adopt. It is much more proactive, and it may be the fact that I have experience on the Planning Commission and relationships built in with folks like the director of the Planning Department and ongoing relationship with a lot of the planning staff, where I get heads up as the president of the neighborhood that say, hey, there is a variance pending at such and such a street within your neighborhood. I think that's a kind of alert process that if we could fortify again and somehow empower neighborhoods to have more advanced notice of what's coming, there could be a real collaborative spirit of development that could help us while we don't sort of encumber ourselves with unnecessary regulation. As the spirit of Houston, you know, with no zoning or relatively little zoning that we have around the airports, there is, it's almost a free-for-all. And if you don't have the deed restrictions in place or other protections like the minimum lot size or the minimum setback, which neighborhoods and communities can apply for, you can be ridden over pretty dramatically. The traffic impact analysis that is triggered with the increase of over 100 car trips per day is a pretty it's a low threshold to trigger an analysis, but what happens with that? Does a neighborhood get informed? Do we seek alternatives? Is it enough to stop unwanted or inappropriate development when we really need to have better means of saying no?
Okay. Well, I mean, one, you know, the other thing that I wonder about is, you know, I mean, obviously, inside Houston, there are some very hot areas for development.
True.
You know, in you know, Montrose Heights, River Oaks, Galleria, Uptown, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also a lot of parts of town that are not.
Sure.
And some of them are even fairly close to downtown. I mean,
right.
You know, what can the city do to try and encourage and enable more development in some of the less populated parts of town, which
right.
frankly are going to be cheaper to build in,
right.
and you know, which are likely to have fewer concerns about infrastructure just because it won't be overloaded to begin with.
Well, right, and infrastructure is a critical word in here to make sure that we have appropriate and adequate supply to support and sustain the oncoming development. If we're talking about residential to support all those new Houstonians who are coming because of our piping hot economy, that's one thing. But to address your first question, I think the answer really lies, again, from my perspective, in the neighborhoods. Not to say that self-determination should rule what can and cannot take place in a neighborhood, but I think for a neighborhood to identify its assets and its liabilities right now, strengths and weaknesses, is a really important part of planning. And in that regard, I know that I've learned my lessons in school over time and working with neighborhoods to really anticipate the things that we need to build on and the things that we're looking to add. I would suggest, and if elected, I find I will, in the at-large capacity, really work with our super neighborhoods and our council district leadership to identify a plan for very specific areas within these territories. I know, for instance, there are super neighborhoods that are embracing the concept of a forward-looking plan that is really self-written, self-described, but can be supported by the city through mapping exercises, through surveys, through public meetings where ideas are sought and a recording is made of some of the perceptions and the aspirations of community residents. That's where I think personally, I feel that I have an understanding of where I can go at the City of Houston to ask for that support, but I'm confident that that is perhaps a privileged perspective that I have through my experience as a professional as well as a former commissioner. I know the folks that hit print on the map machine in the basement of the City Hall, essentially. And if that information can be known throughout the city and the tools brought and the professional assistance through the Planning Department or Public Works, then I think the citizenry will begin to understand the potential impact of planning and deliberating about what should be and what shouldn't be.
Okay. Let's talk about finances. Give me your general opinion of the kind of financial shape the city is in right now.
Well, I know for a fact that we have some storm clouds on the horizon in the form of the pension negotiations with firefighters, less so with the police officers, and I think the municipal employees have already made great strides to understand the importance of coming to the table with the meet and confer set of arrangements with the city. That has not been embraced by the firefighters yet, and we understand that that is something that needs to be picked up by our legislators.
You were anticipating my next question. As you know, the city and Mayor Parker has been pushing for that.
Right.
Do you support the efforts to pass legislation to require meet and confer for the firefighters?
I do. I think it's really important. We obviously need help from our congressional delegation, whether that's through senators or reps in Austin. We need someone to carry the legislation so that we can do it in a fair and open way that will yield results for a better and much more sustainable sense of finances. I think there is a way that we can do this honoring the obligations that we've had in the past with the firefighters and moving to a model that is much more transparent and clear moving forward. That's one component of the budget that you ask more generally about. I think under the mayor's leadership and with the current budget, I think we are moving towards some of the tough decisions that need to be made. I'm very cognizant of the increase in some fees that have been, let's say, increased. So while that is not the answer for all remedies to the city, I think that's a component of reaching a balanced budget. I'm hopeful that the tax base is going to continue to grow. There's been some suggestions made that I think are worth considering, along with every line on the budget. I heard one council member talk recently about the potential for the annexation program to come back to increase our territory. That sets off little alarms for me, again, on the category of infrastructure, to see how that could be really adequately coordinated and expanded. And whether that's a prudent decision, I don't know, but I think it's worth considering. I don't want to resort to increasing taxes or increasing fees, but I think all options need to be on the table while we continue, one hopes, to work through this financial recovery.
Okay. Let's change gears a little and talk about food trucks in particular. Houston has gained a reputation nationally for being a great place for eating. Food trucks have been on the forefront of that, but as you know, under current ordinances, they cannot operate downtown. They have been organizing to get council to consider changes. They, you know, were before council a few months ago, and I know that's going to come back again.
Uh-huh.
Do you support the efforts to change ordinances to allow the food trucks to operate downtown?
I do. And in the medical center. I don't fear food trucks. I think there is one council member in particular who I think is on record for fearing the potential for terrorist exploitation of mobile food trucks and the propane tanks. I think that's not a concern, as the police officers have attested, as we sell propane tanks outside of every Walmart, I think, in town and Academy and elsewhere. That's not a realistic threat. What is important is an appropriate set of regulations to monitor food trucks in a way that's fair and consistent with other restaurants. We are a city of restaurant culture. We've got great foodies. We've got great options out there in this wonderful international city. I think the food trucks only add to that cultural diversity that's such a wonderful part of our city. And I would fear not and embrace it, but be sure to provide the appropriate set of considerations and regulations.
Okay. As you know, in 2001, there was a charter amendment passed in Houston that forbade the city from offering domestic partner benefits to its employees. The world's kind of a different place now. A number of Texas cities have written ordinances to allow that in their own cities. If there were an effort in Houston to overturn that charter amendment and allow the city to offer domestic partner benefits to its employees, is that something you would support?
It is, yes. I believe in the full protection and treatment under the law.
Okay. I've asked you about a number of different subjects, but I never specifically asked you what your priorities would be if you were elected as an at-large council member. Obviously, neighborhood issues, development, quality, and that sort of thing are high on your list. What are the things are you interested in working on if you will become a council member?
Well, if I become a council member, I think one thing I will hit the ground already running on is a working relationship with the existing council, a full understanding of how the committee structure works. The neighborhood committee is one that I expect to be in joining, as well as the infrastructure, the TTI committee, so-called. In that regard, as an architect and a neighborhood leader, I think those are two areas that are very natural for me. As a familiar public official to the city of Houston, I would like to work with the administration, again, to scrutinize the budget and the operations of City Hall. There are various inefficiencies going on right now. We were talking a minute ago about the expansion of Chapter 42 and embracing these amendments. Well, with the potential development that comes, there needs to be a similar set of protections. And so far, we've seen a very modest increase in the number of planners within the Planning and Development Department to help review plans, as we've seen a tremendous growth in application for permits, which is good news for us. But we have not yet worked out on an ongoing basis a way to augment the inspection and, when necessary, process of enforcement of regulations that are not followed. That's something that has been an element of the discussion with the city on behalf of the Super Neighborhood Alliance. How can we go after the bad developers, the bad builders? And by and large, these are not members of GHBA. You know, the good guys are the ones who pay their membership dues. They come to the city and work on rules that, when followed, can function well for the city. What we have to do is go after the bad guys. We have to go after the ones that fill the culverts in front of their houses with stones that are going to influence drainage in a greater scale in these communities that are seeing new drainage and flooding going on. We need to go after enforcement when engineering and architectural plans are not followed within development. That is where I believe the, in particular, the Public Works and Engineering Department needs help. They either need more employees or they need to embrace the growth that the city is facing in a way that's much more in line with how things are developing. A little fact came to my attention recently that it's at 90% completion on a construction project when most final inspections are done for projects, yet it's within that last 10% of the construction when, you know, we really finalize curb cuts and we do things with sidewalks and really make things pedestrian friendly. So the components that have been an area of our concern, like having better walkable streets and pedestrian environments, that's very important detail work that we haven't had a good track record on in terms of requiring adherence to regulations that already exist on the books. And that's what we got to do. We got to do that better.
Okay. I'm asking everyone this question. Who are you supporting for mayor?
I'm supporting Mayor Anise Parker, my mayor, and I believe she has done an incredible job. There are things that I want to help her with and work with while we are serving this city. I think she's been, in her own words, a good community activist, but also a good steward of our budget by and large. Helped us through some difficult times in the past few years, and I think we need to elect her for one more term so she can complete her job.
Okay. And when people go to vote this November in At-Large Number 2, why should they vote to make you the next member of At-Large Number 2 and replace the incumbent?
Well, I do think my track record speaks volumes for the job that I will do on behalf of neighborhoods, on behalf of communities, and as an architect making this city an even better place. We've got some great things to look forward to ahead with the 2017 Super Bowl coming to town, really with, I think, what bodes very well in the expansion of light rail that we're about to see in the coming year. And I think to have an architect with some vision and a sense of what can be done, coupled with the spirit of cooperation and collaboration to work with neighborhoods and development and good old-fashioned business people that know how to make this city a more attractive and more appealing place to both our existing businesses and employees, as well as to those that might want to come and help make Houston an even better place. And I think that's why I'm asking for Houston to support me in the election, and that's why I hope I will capture the votes.
All right. David Robinson, thank you very much for talking to me today.